On this, the 179th episode of the Open Paddock Podcast, Mike got his 500 tickets in the mail, so it must be spring. Rally Mexico, OJ wins it for VW, Ken Block actually finishes in the points. Formula One, Melbourne's coming up, and we have an update on the New Jersey Grand Prix. IndyCar, we're 2 weeks out from St. Pete, TK got married, Ryan Hunter Ray wins popularity contest, and there is a Harlem Shake video floating around that doesn't involve Joseph Newgarden. And there's some other stuff from Mazda Road to Indy. We'll pray for it too. All on this episode of the 179th edition of the Open Paddock Podcast for Monday, March 11th, 2013. And I am your host, Kevin Neely. I have a checkered flag armband on right now and a bunch of books in front of me. And I'm a little tired, to be honest with you. And I've got my rogues gallery of rogues with me this week. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hello, gentlemen. Good evening.
Good evening.
And we've got one voice with us that might not be familiar to us, to you this week. It is the one of the intrepid members of the photography staff here at openpaddock.net. It is the one like Brian McKay.
Good evening.
Gentlemen, I'm brain dead.
Well, you know, I can't feel too sorry for you. You've spent all day at a racetrack. Meanwhile, yeah. I've been spending most of my day grading exams, so suck it.
I'm telling you, man, it was awfully hard today sitting in that media center.
Talking to celebrities
with a catered food, and it was very difficult. I had a hard time coping with it.
I'm not doing this again.
Right.
Nice.
Mike Shaw, what's going on with you?
What's that?
What's going on with you, Mike Shaw?
Me? I'm just kicking it with my gin and tonic for the evening and getting ready to talk a little Rally Mexico.
So Penske continues to evaluate their sports car options for the future.
Yeah, indeed. And this is kind of an interesting one. It'll be good to see Penske back in sports car. It looks like they're very much considering getting into the Grand Am program next year when it consolidates. So.
Cool.
Not sure if that's going to entail a return of Porsche or not.
All right, we've got HVM Status GP working to finalize their WEC lineup.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what we've been hearing. HVM does not have their WEC arrangements made. Supposedly they're working with a they were working with a driver who had funding, and that driver ended up going elsewhere. So now they say they are looking at another driver who happens to have wins in the IndyCar series to bring in some money and drive for the team next year. So it will be interesting to see who that might be. And I think the first name that pops in my mind, of course, would be Ryan Briscoe, since he's looking for something to do. But on the other side, Ryan Briscoe, you would think, would do better than trying to get a seat with a team that may or may not run based on the funding from the driver.
And we've also Formula One FIA news. The vice president Gracia loses his license for being a little too much in the grappa.
This is just poetic, isn't it? I mean, seriously, the FIA vice president is drunk and behind the wheel, and they're better than you, so they can do that, right?
2014 Formula E calendar has been presented to the FIA for approval.
So was that delivered to the local lockup so Garcia could sign off on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's a good question. You know,
I mean, seriously. Holy crap.
I don't know how this happens in the FIA. I mean, something like that happens to the vice president of the FIA, and the guy loses his should lose his job immediately.
Yeah.
If you're trying to promote road car safety, and you're basically what is the FIA? The FIA is a non-governmental organization sanctioned by the freaking why is my brain not working? Meets in New York.
FIA stands for freaking imbecilic assholes.
Well, yes, that's given, but World Motorsport Council? Is that what you're thinking?
No, I'm thinking of the United Nations. Thank you. There we are.
Oh, okay.
They are a non-governmental organization sanctioned by the United Nations, and they go around doing all these things of supposedly joining local sporting and automobile clubs to promote safety and driving and better driving conditions and all these grandiose ideas. But the majority of the time, they just spend a lot of people's money to fly to exotic locations so they can have meetings. And at those exotic locations, they get drunk and go out and drive.
Do as we say, not as we do.
So, the Formula E calendar has been submitted to the FIA. It includes events in Miami, London. It includes Buenos Aires, Rio de Janeiro, Beijing, Putrajaya. Couldn't even tell you where that is. Los Angeles, Rome, and London. They are city street course races. And the interesting thing is, and I don't know if I just read a misprint, but they're talking about these being a 45-minute race where they will institute.
And then didn't I hear something about them?
No.
Pull over to change cars.
They pull over to change cars.
What?
The pits.
I read this. They're going to go in. They will change cars.
Oh, that's messed up.
I read this the first time, and it said 45-minute races, and then they would have to have at a minimum of 2 pit stops to facilitate driver changes. I'm like, a 45-minute race with a driver change? What are you kidding me? You don't think a driver could stand 45 minutes in a car? And then I looked at it again, and it was facilitate driver change from one car to another that has a battery that's charged. So I'm
so
hoping
what is
the
testing
45
like
minute
that?
Thing.
Every car's got a little bit different characteristics. So you're gonna have to go out and test 2 cars.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It seems a little bit weird for sure. We'll have to wait and watch this one formulate because right now I'm just shocked that anybody could go out and get a race schedule of London, Rome, Los Angeles, Miami, Beijing, Buenos Aires, and Rio de Janeiro. That's an amazing schedule in those cities. Now, where at in those cities? I mean, are we – the next thing we're going to hear, these are going to be hosted in local soccer stadiums or something. But no, they're supposed to be city street course races, and that's their intent with the series. So who knows?
And I guess to follow up with the rest of the all-over-the-freaking-place category, I just happened to notice that the Delta Wing is definitely making its return. We were kind of speculating a little while ago, last week or the week before, about it, and it does have the Mazda power plant, and they, even though Nissan pulled out, and they're testing it now with the Mazda engine and the switching to, I guess, Bridgestone tires, because it was Michelin before, and they pulled out as well. So I'll have to see what happens with that. New
did,
version
did you say
of it,
somebody
see how it pans out.
Wings, search it.
Yes, they're using the pull-out method.
It appears they've got new rubber.
Delta Wing pulls out prematurely, testing new rubber.
So anyhow, so they were testing for the 12-hour Sebring that they're going to be doing. So again, I just like the idea of new technology, new ideas that goes against conventional thinking. You know, it was science over tradition, and I'm excited to see it actually get maybe a full development and see if it really can compete, because I don't think it's had a real chance yet.
Oh, I just would have said, hey, I'll have some photos of a nice chrome-wrapped Delta Wing on Thursday before it gets nerfed off the track by the Green Hornet.
Now, I'm trying to look at this thing there on the side pod. Is that a Vodafone sticker?
No.
Oh, with the red and chrome, it ought to be.
Yeah, it's a red Delta Wing insignia.
Ah, okay, okay. Yeah, I saw the Delta Wing on the nose cone, I guess, for lack of a better word. On the fuselage side. Yes.
And it's got Bridgestone on there somewhere.
Yeah, it's got Bridgestone on the empennage. Or actually, it'd be the vertical stabilizer, wouldn't it?
The vertical stabilizer, for sure.
You know, tragically, got nerfed at Le Mans, and then Petit Le Mans also got nerfed off in practice.
Yeah.
You know, it's as if, let's paint it chrome so they might be able to see us and not whack us.
Right. Good luck with that. So, we did have an event this past weekend, did we not, Mr. Shaw?
Oh, yes, we did. Raleigh, Mexico. Boy, and it was just as exciting as, you know, it's one of my favorite events of the year. Well, I will honestly say one reason is it's within a couple of time zones, so I can actually hear it without having to stay up all night. So, once again, of course, no TV coverage here in the USA. Red Bull Media House, if you're listening, please fix that. Thank you very much. But yeah, it was pretty exciting pretty much right from the get-go. Starting right with, the first stage of the second day. The first night, Thursday night was just some street stages, just kind of for the fans, of which down in Mexico, they have some awesome fans. They're just crowded all over the place and, really cheering them on, which is great to see. Wish we had that for Rally America here in the U.S., but anyway, we ended up with Yari Matti Latvala just 500 meters from the start on Friday morning. Hits a rock, suspension broken, done. Yari Matti's luck going to change?
When he stops driving.
When he takes up a new profession.
Yeah, I mean, and what sucks is, you know, for the poor guy, I mean, he's a very emotional driver, and to have him have so many problems. I mean, when he's relaxed and he's comfortable, look out. He is one of the fastest drivers ever. I mean, he's amazingly quick. But he's got to get relaxed and get comfortable. He just gets so on edge and something happens and he doesn't recover very well. In this case, it wasn't really his fault. He was, you know, a little bit farther down the start order and the rock looked like it was pulled out by somebody else. He drove the same line that others had, and it hit a weak spot. But that's one of those things you got to be prepared for when you're driving farther down that line. And you don't cut the corner maybe quite as much, or, if you got the room, take it wide maybe, you know. It's a car breaker of an event there in Mexico, and you just got to be careful. So, yeah, that was the first thing that happened there. By the end of that same stage, Evgeny Novikov, who's the second on the Qatar M Sport team with Mads Osberg, which is the one that's kind of run by Nasser Al-Attiyah, he ended up having electrical issues. Even though he started out really fast, he ended up dropping way back. And again, as we were trying to follow what was going on, the split times were just sporadic because that stupid ass new company. SIT, not to be confused with Stage 1 Technologies, who used to do the timing and scoring. It was hard to follow with the frustration. You know what's really the worst about that part is the announcers trying to cover for it. You know, you have to feel bad for these people that are trying to, you know, rally is a sport where you don't have that side-by-side action with cameras on them all the time, so all you've got to keep it exciting and interesting is looking at these split times. When you get one on the first split, then you see nothing, and then finally the sixth split, something shows up. And then later on, you find out there's a correction. A correction for time should never, ever happen at that professional level.
Wow.
Anyway, I'm ranting a bit.
You need to be ranting. That's ridiculous. I mean, it's amateur hour at the timing booth.
You know, the FIA said that the new company was, you know, on a short leash when they went out to Sweden. Well, Sweden is freaking easy. It's all flat. Where are most of the races done when it comes to rally? Mountainside. They're racing up and down the side of freaking mountain. Every event except for Sweden, where it's just Arctic Circle, baby, flat. You know, you might have some little rolling hills here and there, but you ain't got shit for mountains. you know? And so, of course, the splits there were fine. I'm like, okay, you know, if you're going to give them a test, yeah. If you're going to test out this new company and see how they're doing, well, here was your test. They suck. Fire them. Okay. That was Friday's drama. It was mostly about, Lavala going out and having his incident. And like I said, Novikov, who's a real up and coming driver. He's got so much speed. He just doesn't quite have the consistency that like Mads Osberg has. Going into the, what would be the third day, Saturday, it started out with a very long, stage. Mads Osberg was in second behind, Sebastian Ogier, who again kind of dominated. One thing Ogier's got over everybody else, and I think he learned this from Loeb, is saving tires. He knows to manage the tires for that longer, faster section where he can then just open it up and everybody else is going, shit, where'd my tires go? So, Ogier, end up pulling ahead with Mads trading some stages with him. And unfortunately, Mads at the end of that first long stage on Saturday suddenly is trying to shift gears and after the stop line and it won't shift. The car is just stuck. Very frustrating. He ends up having to retire. So that kind of left two of our top guys that we were excited to challenge Ogier kind of out of it. And then next up was, Mikko Hirvonen, who couldn't really get his Citroen just quite as comfortable in the first day. He ended up, finally getting it figured out on Saturday, started catching up, but he was still over a minute behind, Ogier, and Ogier was just kind of humming along. So Mikko was then having to challenge with Thierry Neuville, who's, another young gun with the Qatar M Sport team. He's really, really young, and they were battling it out for second place up until Sunday. And then Sunday is when, unfortunately, Thierry ended up going off just a little bit, trying to battle for that second spot, and slid off a little bit into a ditch, took about 20 seconds to get out, and no more a challenge for that second spot. So he was in third, his best finish ever. So at the end of the day, it was Sebastian Ogier with a dominating win. The next was Mikko Hirvonen in second was Thierry Neuville. Other notables, Ken Block. He did a great job, actually. He went into it going, you know what? I'm just going to be conservative. I'm just going to, be careful here. And he ended up finishing seventh place. He never had a real problem with his car, never, didn't break anything, didn't go off into some flipping, rolling into a tree, like we're so used to seeing of Ken Block. So, great job on his end, for really making it look, like an American, can actually rally race, So a great show on his end. Other notables was on Saturday when Ogier was running along there. He was driving along, his last one of the top cars on stage, and ends up finding a gate in front of him that was closed. He jokingly at the end of the stage said that I think somebody does not want me to win.
So wait, it was a closed gate across the stage?
Correct. So they're they're driving on all these think of it like the open range areas we have here in America.
Yeah.
Where you've got cattle going around, it's all fenced in. You got a gate in between these gravel roads, right?
Mm-hmm.
So big metal gate. And they're driving along, and all of a sudden it's shut.
Holy crap! That's kind of Baja 1000-esque, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so he slams on the brakes, and thankfully his co-driver popped out, got it open for him, and they were able to continue on. But they lost about 30 seconds right there. But he didn't even. He kind of laughed at the end of it. I mean, he was so far ahead, and Mikko did not have the car to challenge him or the determination, it seemed. So. Yeah, that was definitely one of the more interesting events. Actually, I really encourage you guys to hop on WRC YouTube to see that, or go on the website. I mean, that's just freaky to see just all of a sudden you're driving along and closed gate in front of you.
Oops!
thankfully they saw it in time and didn't, go driving right through it. That would have caused some nasty things to happen. Other notable items kind of go through there. Guerra, he's the Mexican driver that won the he won the production class last year. And so he's been, you know, working hard about trying to get the ticket to drive in the top level WRC cars. He got a chance for this event and he did end up finishing eighth. They said his sponsor said if he had a good showing here, he very well could get, you know, sponsorship to drive the rest of the season. Haven't heard confirmation of that yet, but it looks like he, I mean, he definitely ended up in the points, didn't go off, kept a good steady pace. And worked out real well for him. Finally, of the notables to talk about would be Chris Atkinson. Chris Atkinson got an extra chance to ride in a Citroen DS3. So he got to drive for the Citroen team. And he's not really had a nice car under him for quite a while. He was driving that Italian, was it Mini last year? And it just sucked. He could not get it tuned right. Something about it, it just was crap. And this time he had a problem, unfortunately, on the first day, and ended up coming back and moving right up the field, and ended up challenging Block, which really wasn't too much of a challenge for someone like Chris Atkinson. So he ended up finishing sixth place. And I'll just kind of run real quick through the start order or through the finishing real quick. So again, Ogier won it. Hirvonen second. Neuville got third. Danny Sordo ended up fourth. Never happy through the whole event. Nasser Al-Attiyah ended up fifth. That was great. Nice to see him finally out there. Chris Atkinson sixth. Ken Block in a great position in seventh. So Benito Guerra that we were just talking about in eighth. Martin Prokop in ninth. And Evgeny Novikov getting the last point in tenth. Unfortunately, Mads Osberg ended up 11th. He just never was able to recover and get any points. So that was Rally Mexico. I'll try and type up an article on it and get some... get some information on that, on what happened in better detail up on the website. I started up typing up something, but got busy to get anything actually published yet. But yeah, exciting stuff.
You know, the Rally Mexico, any kind of motorsport event that happens in Mexico is already a little bit sketch, right? The Rally Mexico for the WRC is always, I always like watching that event. And I'm stunned by Block, to be honest. I really expected him to tear up another car on the rocks, and to hear that he finished and finished well, that's pretty cool.
And it wasn't just that he finished well; it was his attitude. I mean, just right at the very beginning, he was so relaxed, and he knows this event better than any other. He's raced there more times than any of the other events that he's done. You know, back when he was with Rally America, he had made a run down there in a Group N car, driving the Subaru. And so, you know, he knows the area and what it's like. And so, you know, he was able to just kind of sit back and relax. Some of this stuff was familiar to him. And, you know, once again, another thing I like about Ken Block, everybody it keeps saying it too. The way he interacts with the media and with all the other drivers can learn from him. He's really, really good at that. He would stop at the end of the stage and some little Mexican girl comes running up. Apparently he's like the daughter of one of the marshals or something like that. And she's got this pink DC shoe and she's handing it up to him in the car window. He's got to get to the next stage, but he takes the time to stop and sign it. Of course, instead of holding on to this now shoe that's signed by him, that's probably worth a lot more now. She puts it on, starts dancing around. But, you know, it's just, again, it's just that attitude of, being with the fans, taking the time to be with them and not getting, you know, you get some guys that when all the fans start mobbing you, they just get angry. But he just takes it all in and does what he can because he knows that he's a great marketer. So, yep, good professional drive from him. And again, just great with the fans. So it was a great showing. Hopefully it's not his only event in the WRC. It's kind of sketchy what he's going to be doing for the season because Global Rallycross still has not released their schedule other than the fact they're going to be at all the X Games throughout the world. But other than their other events here in the U.S., we have no idea what they're going to be yet. They still haven't released a schedule. So then he's going to be doing all those Gymkhana World Tour thing, of which I don't think that schedule is finalized either. So Ken's got a very busy schedule ahead of him, and whether or not he makes it to one of the other events is still unknown. I don't know, I'd like to see him maybe out Finland or something like that, which is always an exciting one out there. In other rally news, I was going to say just real quick that Robert Kubica, or however you say it, former F1 driver, He is going to be driving at the Rally in the Canaries, which is the 21st of March. So it's in a couple weeks. And they've already seated him as fifth, so they think he's pretty quick. He's going to be right up there with Craig Breen and the rest. So that'll be pretty exciting to see him out there. Other news, we've got Hyundai. We've been talking about their little adventure trying to get into the World Rally Championship coming in 2014. Well, they have an updated version of their car that was at the Geneva Motor Show. So it's not just these pictures of something that wasn't built. There is an actual built version now that they've been testing. But no word on who the drivers are going to be for that during the testing. One other leak with that was that we might see the car on the last event of Rally GB. So that'll be exciting to see yet another manufacturer in there. My hope is to see Chris Meek, who got screwed by Mini and ProDrive Mini with when BMW pulled out as a true manufacturer. And so he didn't get his ride that he deserved. So I'm really hoping that Chris Meek gets the seat there for the I-20, I think it is what they call the Hyundai there. So, and then finally, VW did say that they're going to be registering a second manufacturer team, just so they can get Andreas Mikkelsen added to the list. A true manufacturer team is only two drivers, and they have to add a second one if you want another driver in there. And so, just to get Andreas Mikkelsen ready to start running out of Portugal, the Volkswagen Motorsport team added Team Mikkelsen, or whatever they're going to actually call it. But they do have a second manufacturer name in there now. So that about wraps it up for the Rally World.
What's the next rally coming up? I don't think Rally America is on the stages again until May. Is that right?
That's correct. So in May, we've got May 3rd through the 6th is going to be my home event over here, Oregon Trail Rally, of which I'm going to be volunteering at. Yep. I'll be excited on that. But yeah, that's until May. So a lot of idle stuff going on there. And actually, even worse, the Canadian Rally Championship, they don't have an event until June.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a long time to wait.
Guys scared about sponsors because, you know, you're not in their face anymore, right? You're not headlines or anything like that. And makes some very nervous people. So the next event would be next in Portugal will be the WRC event in Portugal.
All right, well, off of the slippery stuff and then back to the slippery stuff then, right?
Yeah.
Harbor was kind of a rally almost, given how much rain y'all were having from what I was seeing on the Twitter traffic.
Yeah, it was slightly wet out there, wouldn't you say, Brian?
Yes, drizzle all day.
Well, it was all right when you knew it was clearing up when the rain stopped blowing sideways and started coming straight down. And it was getting a little bit better at that point.
The thing is, these drivers are coming from their rental cars, walking through a downpour into the building for their glamour shots. Their suits are soaked with water, glistening with droplets. And they're shaking their droplets off and looking for towels. And the photographers are ready to take their pretty pictures.
Yeah, so we had an early start this morning, 8 o'clock photographers meeting. It was all for naught, I believe.
This was a briefing for the track photographers, and there's no need for a trackside photog meeting because the lights card didn't run.
Yeah, so after Brian and I sat over in the third floor of the lovely Barber Motorsports Park control tower for about, I'd say, 30 minutes, and we decided to hightail it over to the other side of the track where the actual drivers were coming through. So, excuse me. So we got over there and found the media area in the warehouse next to the Porsche driving experience. Sat down, put everything together, and then the internet went out. So, and the internet was out for a good 30 minutes, and then we finally... Everything got back together, and then the drivers started coming through. We had EJ Viso come through first. Talked to him for a while, actually, about the whole Team Venezuela project and how he got started with that. It was very interesting. It was very interesting, though, hearing the drivers come through and kind of give their little talks.
Everything's roses and sunshine.
Yeah, everything's roses and sunshine. Hope springs eternal at the beginning of the year. Flabbity blue, blah, blah, blah.
Well, this new team is so much better than the team I was with last year. That was, we'll leave that behind.
Yeah, we're not going to take anything away from that. Trying to remember some. When Elio came in to the building, he and AJ Allmendinger got into a little bit of a war of words in the media room there. That rivalry has definitely already started as Elio and Dinger had an argument about who has better hair.
Oh, nice.
And which that, Penske driver? That, Sebastian Saavedra stepped in and said, oh, hell no.
Actually, yeah.
That came up later when someone realized that he was, he's in the series, although not in Team Penske. He is a contender for the best hair in the series.
Yeah, I actually asked Saavedra. I said, you know, Elio and Dinger were in here earlier arguing about how who had the best hair on Team Penske, and I wonder if you think you have the best hair in the paddock. And he looked at me and smiled and said, definitely.
Nice, so, nice. I'm so glad he's got a ride. I really am.
He's such a nice kid.
Because then I can whip out that quote about somebody calling him Porcupine Head.
He's such a nice little unassuming kid, though. He really is. He's just... And one thing that he kept bringing up was the fact that he's like, you know, I'm only 22. He's like, I've got a while. And one of the questions I asked him was, you know, how do you think taking a step back and going back to last year has helped you? And he said, you know, he said, I had to view it from the standpoint of this is my career. And he said, sometimes we make decisions that aren't the best. And we were talking about when he ran those races with Conquest in 2011. And he said, you know, he said, I wasn't ready to come up to the big cars at that point. He said, I should have done another year in lights in 2011. And then we went on to talk about how, you know, that year and then again last year when he ran the races with AFS, about how the issue came down to funding and about how he was very afraid to tear up the car and be aggressive because the funding simply wasn't there for them to race anymore if he tore up the car. So he's like you're driving all the time with that in the back of your head. So
if you break your toys, I'm not buying you another one.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a lot like playing poker with scared money. It's a guaranteed way to lose. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're playing scared, you're not playing at the peak of your ability. And you're going to make bad decisions. You're going to make decisions that slow you down. And yeah, it's just not an ideal situation. It's not how you want to play the game.
Let's see. I'm looking at the open test entry list here. At the top of it is Ryan Hunter Ray, who was very personable, by the way. We actually had a nice chat about Race of Champions about how that actually works. And he was talking about how you go in and you take. They have the cars lined up. He said you do two laps in one car and you get out, you do two laps in the next, and then you keep doing laps until you've done laps in all the cars. And he said then when you go to the actual race, he said the only track time you get in that car before the actual race is the warm-up lap. So
unless you're Michael Schumacher or Sebastian Vettel and you've shrewdly rented similar cars a couple weeks prior and practice.
Which is what he said what they did.
You know, Ryan flies around the world to Bangkok, gets off an airplane with 3 hours of sleep and gets in the car and starts ripping around the course.
So that was how that worked. AJ Allmendinger was a fairly interesting chat as well. One of the questions that he was asked is like, you know, are you here to entice other NASCAR drivers to give open wheel racing a chance? And he said, absolutely not. He's like, I'm here to drive. He said, let me tell you this. He says, it's not like I just walked away from IndyCar and don't watch it anymore. He said, He said IndyCar just had one of the best seasons it's had in a long time, and he said, and I thoroughly enjoyed watching it. He said that the problem with the IndyCar series comes simply down to marketing. And he said that if you want, he said, it's not that he said he doesn't think that it's people ignore IndyCar. He said, I just don't think they know it's there.
Well, this is something that we've been saying for a while, both from a fan standpoint and also from a manufacturer interest standpoint. I mean, this was part of our big rant last couple of times, right? With the aero kits and with the light chassis being delayed, without manufacturer interest, they're not going to do any promotion. There's not going to be much interest. Or as much interest as there could be from the fandom. Meanwhile, you know, if Elsie, you know, I'm a huge Ford fan. All of my cars except for my pickup is a Ford. And the only reason why that's not a Ford is because it's a little Dodge POS that I bought for $100. But you know, if Ford were suddenly involved in the IndyCar series, as much as I like the IndyCar series, I would be even more interested and fanatical about it. You know, when a manufacturer that you have an interest in participates, and that's going to elevate your interest in the sport.
Well, I think Chevy and Honda buy full-page magazine ads and run TV ads, but AJ was saying that people all across America don't know what channel to find this on, and it's not coming to their city. If you take it around the country to cities, states we haven't been in, people will wake up, oh, this is cool, I like this. Right now, NASCAR is the 800-pound gorilla.
Well, all right, so what's the solution then to taking it around to different cities? We touched on this a little bit last week. And, you know, you can't just show up, go anywhere. Also, you don't want to string together a bunch of crappy streetcar races and people say, oh, hey, look, it's IndyCar. Oh, wow, that sucks. You know, you gotta make sure that, one, you're in good markets. Two, that the action that you're presenting in those markets are solid. And so I don't mean to discount Allmendinger's comments because he really is on the money on that. But, you know, it's not as simple, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, is to say, well, we just need to be in more of these markets.
Well, and another thing he was getting at, too, was like things like sponsorship activation and the series putting the initiative forward to get the word out about itself and doing things on that end.
But he was insistent that you do need to take the product places it hasn't gone before, not China, but places in North America where people are consuming other forms of racing like NASCAR's 3 Series. Give them a chance to see it in person and smell it and hear it and feel it, and they'll be hooked on that.
And he was also talking about how we need to go back to places that we've been that were successful.
He didn't name any. He didn't say, let's revisit
Portland. Please.
Yeah, he didn't. You know, and someone brought up Pocono, and he's very interested in trying the Tricky Triangle and thought it's great that you're going into either new markets or previously visited markets because they're consuming other forms of racing. We need to show them this is neat, too. We're really fast.
Well, I'm really excited for IndyCar's return to Pocono. I mean, after all, that's what the track was built for, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Built for open-wheel racing. So,
you know, another thing that was brought up, and this was something that Graham Rahal mentioned, was that he thinks that IndyCar needs to pay more attention to their scheduling. Because his argument was the fact that IndyCar is going up against too many other big-name events. He's like, you know, I can't do Sebring or Le Mans or Petit Le Mans because of conflicts with IndyCar.
Hmm. Well, again, that's something that's easier said than done. You know, especially with Sebring, he could do Sebring if he wanted.
He actually had a very good reason.
Okay.
He said it's because when he goes to these car owners and says, hey, I want to do the 12 hours of Sebring, he said there's no IndyCar conflict with that.
Right.
He said that's fine. He said, but they want someone that can do all three of those races, essentially.
Mm.
And he said, and we can't do that. He said, I can't pull that off because there's a conflict with the weekend of Le Mans. He said there's conflict with a Petit Le Mans.
Gotcha.
He said, so it just makes it more, he said, like, a guy like Ryan Hunter-Reay can pull it off, because he's a champion. He said, but for the rest of us, it's kind of difficult to put those deals together because of the conflicts.
Well, part of the problem, though, is that you can't – I mean, schedule building is like a hyperdimensional Tetris. You know, it's difficult to, one, find dates that the venues are interested in and that the series is interested in and can make work and work best for what other entertainment options, in racing options, sporting options are out there. And then you've got places like Long Beach and St. Petersburg, where they have significant date equity in those events. Mm-hmm. You can't just go changing those around. And so again, I understand his concern. But, you know, it's not as, one does not simply go changing the schedule, I guess, to use the internet meme that's been going around. There are conflicts, and it would be nice if there weren't, but it's not a simple fix, I guess, is, again, what I'm trying to say.
Well, and then beyond that, you just have to throw out Sebring, Petit Le Mans, and Le Mans, as wonderful of events as they are. They don't draw a big TV number here in the States. And because of that, I can't see adjusting your schedule to fit Marco Andretti into driving at those events just so he's happy. You really do have to work the TV numbers for your series and not worry about other series that are also struggling for numbers. You're worried about going up against NFL. You're worried about going up against Major League Baseball playoffs. You're worried about going up against major events, the Masters, that sort of stuff. I would be much less worried about going up against Petit Le Mans.
All I can say is other open-wheel drivers, IndyCar drivers, are racing at Petit Le Mans, the 24 Hours of Daytona, and Sebring. And I think this unnamed person was just had sour grapes because he didn't get to drive for Ganassi at Daytona and get a Rolex.
Which we talked at length with Charlie Kimball about his Rolex, by the way.
It just seemed like sour grapes because I saw Ryan Hunter-Reay run at Daytona, play second. He'll be in Sebring at the end of this week. This stops. For there's a will, there's a way. He made a comment like, well, I couldn't get any good car. No one wanted to give me a good enough car to have a chance to podium. All right.
And Graham seemed bitter about his time at Ganassi. I mean, I'm talking very bitter.
Yeah, there's a story that came out this week. I can't remember who published it. Maybe it was Speed. But they're basically saying that Graham Rahal was asked about potentially going back to Ganassi later on in his career. And he's like, no, everything would be fine. You know, we'll go back there. No big deal.
He just said, I haven't burned any bridges. But
seriously, I mean, from what you're saying, he's talking just like he was talking when he was a member of the team. Hey, give me data, you know, and all that kind of crap that he just kept constantly complaining about. And there's no chance he's ever going back to Ganassi. None.
No, because one thing he said today was that he had already pretty much decided at the beginning of last season that he was not coming back to Ganassi.
Wow.
And that when August hit and his option came up, that was when he had started looking at other options. So, I mean, he had already decided at the start of 2012 that he wasn't going to come back.
Now, what good do you bring with you from your time at Ganassi to your new team? What did you get out of that? Nothing?
Yeah, he said absolutely nothing.
Totally different. Totally different.
Wow.
Yeah. And then when I asked him about how the environment at Ganassi was different than the environment working at Rahal Letterman, and he went on to talk about how his dad knows the name of every mechanic that works in their shop, and he said, I can't say that for the other place. Mm-hmm. So, I think it comes down to Graham is not good in a corporate environment.
I think it comes down to Graham thinks highly of himself.
Well, that's something that's kind of come across ever since he came into to Champ Car, really, or at least that's the vibe that one gets watching his interaction on TV. You know, in person, I haven't had much interaction.
What if my connection just dropped off?
No, I'm still here.
Huh.
Doug,
I'm where'd still you here, go, buddy? Doug.
What? What?
You disappeared, man. Right in the middle of a sentence.
Ah. Okay. Well, I didn't have anything important to say anyway.
Yeah.
I just ran about what a kind of an entitled D-bag Graham is. But.
Well, yeah, I'm sure Mike Hull and Tim Keane know all the employees on their IndyCar and sports car teams. You know, even if Mr. Ganassi doesn't, the guys running the shows know everybody. No, Mr. Ganassi's not going to know the names of all 394 persons.
You know, another topic, too, that was that seemed to resonate amongst a lot of the drivers during the interviews today was they all think the off season is way too long and that there's not enough for them to do. Because, for example, Simon Pagenaud stated that he had actually flown to Birmingham directly from France because he was in his hometown doing a rally race because he simply was bored from not driving.
Well, I mean, you know, again, you know, this is not an unknown issue, right? Right. You know, there's been many times in IndyCar where we've had 6 months. One, two, three. Yeah. Oh crap. We've had 6 months of off season. You know, it's been something that's been an issue for a very long time, but it's also a hard issue to try and fix. Because again, you're up against that, you know, hyperdimensional Tetris that is a schedule.
Well, they suggested starting in February, right after the 24 Hours of Daytona.
Where?
At a southern racetrack like Homestead, St. Petersburg, New Orleans.
St. Petersburg won't change their date. They have too much equity in that date.
Outside of New Orleans, Nashville, Phoenix, Homestead, somewhere southern. Start earlier because 6 months out of the cockpit, they're not working on the racecraft and they're not attracting new North American viewers.
Well, Ian, I understand that. But Homestead, first of all, we used to show up there. Along with the 24 fans that bothered to buy a ticket. Phoenix has said they don't want us. We haven't been to Nashville in a very long time. So unless we're looking at unless we're talking about a street race, maybe
Orleans, Fort Lauderdale thing?
Then, yeah, you know, the Fort Lauderdale thing comes around, although that's kind of front loading a lot of races in that southeast market.
Well, I think that's an opportune time to say Mexico City or Brazil.
Ah, yes. That would work out well.
Well, does Fontana have to be the last race of the season?
Yes, Fontana is contractual.
Wait, why couldn't it be the first, you know?
Well, when's their first NASCAR race? Don't they have two at Fontana?
Probably. I don't know. I don't know the NASCAR schedule.
Well, I know this whole ground has been trod before here at Open Paddock and on Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee. Just that the reporters today couldn't help asking them about their off season. So of course they all said it's too long.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They would like to begin in February. You know, that's.
But the funny thing, like to start watching racing in February too.
The funny thing was is you had some drivers like Pagenaud and some of the other drivers talking about it's like we'd like more testing. We'd like the opportunity to be in the car more often. And then you would also have guys like Joseph Newgarden say that I'm glad we don't have a lot of testing because my team can't afford to do all that testing.
Yeah. I think that ideal is more racing, leave the testing pretty much where it's at. They do get plenty of testing in the series. If you want to compare it to Formula One, they get Boku testing.
4 days last year due to the manufacturer days, and this year it's a real paucity of test days and just sharing seats, and it really stinks. And, of course, you can earn money racing, so they like to begin racing earlier, even finish later if possible.
Hmm.
Yeah, because one thing I heard several drivers bring up is the fact that, like, the June's part of the schedule is just so packed. They're like, because one thing Elio brought up was he said it would be nice to have maybe a little bit of a break in like June and July and let the crew guys, he said, you know, it's not bad on the drivers. He said it's bad on the mechanics. He said, let the mechanics have a chance to go home and rest a little bit during the season like you do in Formula One.
Yeah.
And, spend some time with their families and kind of regroup a little bit.
Yeah. You know, jealously, I would rather see them race kind of on a more consistent basis more than once every 2 weeks. But if once every 2 weeks is the optimum for these teams, once every 2 weeks would work. It's just they need more races than 15 races. Don't give me this crap about 19 this year, because you're really having 15 events and that's it.
19 on 17 weekends.
19 on or 18 on 15 weekends is what it is this year, because Detroit and Toronto and
we have three doubleheader weekends.
Three. Oh.
Detroit, Toronto, and where's the other one? Houston. Yeah.
Well, the original point was that they're going to be out of the cockpit from September 15 to March 22, and it's just unacceptable. Yeah. Been half the cockpit.
One of the best quotes of the whole thing has to be when asked about his off-season plan, Joseph Newgarden said that he was, and I quote, absolutely jacked because they got to spend some time on the 7-point shaker.
Ooh.
And I mean, that was his exact words too. He said, I am absolutely jacked up about that.
Substituting real track time, well, is 7-post shaker rig time, wind tunnel time, and simulator time.
Yeah, he was talking about how he got 2 days in that fancy simulator that Delora has. So that was Newgarden is such a great interview too. So let's see, Tony Kanaan. There was lots of talk about Kanaan's wedding this past week and the ensuing Harlem Shake video that accompanied the wedding. Let's see here, looking at the list a little bit more. Dario was very relaxed today, by the way. he seemed like a different person. He really did. It was like the old Dario back.
Oh, no. It was Dario. Dario is now a player.
And Scott Dixon's just Scott Dixon. I mean, he never changes. Sato, one thing that sticks out with me about Sato was he was talking about how well he and AJ Foyt get along
from the first meeting.
Yeah, he's like, from the first meeting, we have just been like awesome.
As weird as that sounds, I can totally see that.
He said, I couldn't understand everything AJ was saying at first. I couldn't get a hold of his accent, but I got most of it. And he's very, very passionate about racing. He has full confidence in me, et cetera.
Does anyone get everything AJ is saying?
Well, I'm a Southerner. I can probably understand AJ better than Mr. Sato.
Let's see. Going down the list, James Jakes is really excited about being in a better car this year. He is – he's like – his whole thing is he's really honestly thinking that he can pull out a top 10, like, series points total. Ooh. And he's really, really challenging himself to hit that target. On the official entry list here, the 18 and 19 are both listed as TBA Dale Coyne Racing, which was one of the shocks of the day is when we're all sitting in there and Stefan Wilson comes walking in and we're like, what are you doing here? Because he's wearing a Lights uniform and he's got the Mazda Road to Indy, Firestone Indy Lights patches and everything on it. And he sits down and we're talking about season and he's talking about his upcoming program and everything. And I said to him, I said, well, Justin, where are you?
Stefan,
where are you racing? He said, oh, well, I'll be with Dale Coyne. And a collective, what? Kind of rose up from the room.
Well, it's yet to be announced. Maybe the ink isn't dry yet, but.
Yeah. He's definitely testing with Dale Coyne. And like you said, the ink isn't dry, but the signs point that direction. And what you heard today is what's come out in articles today as well. So,
B is in the car tomorrow. Stefan's in the car on Friday, Wednesday rather. Just and like another thing with the Jakes thing is James said that Conway is going to be in the car tomorrow, getting some testing time, and then Jakes will have it all day on Wednesday. When Justin Wilson, when he came in. I asked him, I said, last lap, Indianapolis, Steph's in first. You're in second. Do you, Sato?
Deploy the Sato.
That was exactly what I asked him. I said, do you, Sato? And he said, of course. He said, it's indie and you have to. But one thing that Justin really stressed was not jeopardizing his own career to help his brother. And he said, it's my little brother. And he said, I really want to see him succeed. He said, but I've also got to remember that I have to be a little bit selfish and look out for myself too. So that was, of course, Justin Wilson's always great to talk to.
That attitude though serves Stefan well also.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Stefan, you don't want the potential of it being thought that you're only there because of your brother or because your brother let you win a race or something like that. You want to make sure that people understand that you're there on your own merits and for no other reason. You just happen to have a brother who's also doing this.
Right. Let's see, Ed Carpenter. Ed got new glasses. I'll say that. Ed's wearing some big, thick black glasses now.
He didn't go with the no rim with the red arms a la Bourdais?
No. He went with the thick black hipster glasses like I wear. So, Oriel Servia was showing off his Chevy t-shirt that he had on to keep the Chevy people there happy with him. But one of the big things with Oriel was he was very happy about having, for the first time in his career, a second season with the same team.
For the first time since 1999.
Yeah. So he says that the Panther DRR people have really good chemistry. And ironically enough, on the entry list here for the open session that I was looking at, for some reason, his team's engine is listed as Lotus on this. So, Amy Conrath, if you're listening to this, Arnie Shribben, you might want to change that.
At least it didn't say Briggs and Stratton.
Yeah. Briggs and Stratton probably would have been better than the Lotus. And I'm talking about the Briggs and Stratton off of like a snapper lawnmower. Let's see. Marco Andretti. Marco said that he has been spending time with a coach to improve his skills and that he needs to not be as aggressive as he was and focus on being smoother. When asked the name of his coach, he said that he could not tell us. Hmm. So I think it's the Stig.
The bottom line is get all your braking done before you turn into a corner.
Yeah.
Don't and if Wood Marker lets you cross tires. Yeah, it was interesting. I saw an article talking about that, and they basically said that his Achilles heel is street courses. He does terrible on street courses, and part of it is simply because of how he treats the front tires on street courses.
Right.
Well, so his unnamed driver coach is telling him how to not destroy the front tire. I guess the people at Dallara were telling him how to not destroy the front tire, and how much of destroying the tire comes down to his lack of talent.
Well, that's one thing that he brought up too was like, he said, the problem is I'm braking too deep going into these corners. And he said, it's pitching the nose around too violently and it's tearing it up basically. And he said, I've got to stop doing that. So,
new driving style and new car number. We'll see what happens.
Basically.
Nice.
He is very excited to have Andy Hampson back.
Craig Hampson.
Big asset. Andy Hampson was a bicycle racer. He's thoroughly excited about having him back. Says that's really going to help him out. That they were sad to lose Alan McDonald, but they think they have made up for that. Tristan Vaudier speaks better English than most of us.
Very good, precise English. Better than many, many persons in Florida.
And he's a young looking kid too.
Well, he's a good kid to talk to. We had him on the show a while back when he won the Star Mazda championship, and a really together kid, has a really good head on his shoulders, very articulate. I'm really hoping he does extremely well in there at Sam Schmidt.
Oh, and here's a clarification, by the way. This came from Simon Pagenaud. If you are discussing Simon Pagenaud's 77 entry, that is Schmidt Hamilton Racing. If you're discussing Tristan Vaudier's 55 entry, that is Schmidt Peterson Racing.
Ooh, okay.
And it has to do with the way the HP money was doled out.
Okay.
Pagano has the HP money, so he was good with Davey Hamilton. So that's that reasoning.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the season. We've seen in the past where supposedly the same but separate teams where money is kind of sloshed over, you know, that firewall that's been put in place with contracts, and people get rather agitated about that. We've seen lawsuits and contract disputes come up from that in the past. Not saying that's going to happen with Sam Schmidt's outfit, because he runs a really tight ship, but it is something to keep an eye on. That is always a dangerous situation. It's always easy to even have the appearance of that, which could be very detrimental.
Well, I see both these guys winning podiums or prize money pretty quick. Mark my
prize word. Money? This is IndyCar. There's no prize money.
Fame and fortune for both those guys. They're both really, really quick.
Badgers?
Yes, absolutely.
We don't need no stinking Badgers. Let's see. Simona DiSilvestro, to quote Phil Robertson, is happy, happy, happy right now because she is no longer attached to a boat anchor, essentially. And I congratulate her. Actually, she was walking out. I stopped to talk to Simona for a second, and I looked at her, and I said, congratulations for not having a boat anchor attached to your car this year. And she laughed, and she said, I agree.
And she has a wily veteran for a teammate. She's not a lone wolf anymore.
Yeah. And it seems that she's been paying a lot of attention to TK. And TK has been helping her out a lot, too, it sounds. But that was one interesting thing that TK said was, He said, I have to understand, too, that she's not going to do everything the same way that I do. And he said, because when I was teammates with Alex Zanardi back in the day, he said, Zanardi would say things to me, and I would respond to him. Zanardi would tell him, I have to understand that I do things the old way, and you do things the new way. And we're never going to do things the same way. So you have to accept that. And he said, and I keep having to remind myself of that with her. So, Charlie Kimball, we talked a long time with Charlie about, the Daytona 24, actually, and he was really excited to talk about that. Cause he was saying that one of the coolest things is the box that the watches come in that you're given for winning the Rolex 24. He said they have each of the drivers on the winning team sign the box that the Rolex has come in. And he said it's really neat to look at that box sitting on his mantle at home and see Scott Pruitt and Mimo Gidley's autographs on there.
Rojas?
Yeah, yes. Rojas. So, Tagliani, well, that dude.
Does he have new sponsors?
Well, Barracuda Networks was back. Magnolia's back. Bowers and Wilkins is back.
It was TK and others like Simona that had new sponsors.
Yeah, TK has a new sponsor that we can't discuss. So
and lots of associate sponsors are new to the series because I guess it's affordable.
So I'm sure all that will be unleashed tomorrow, but everyone kind of had the gentleman's agreement today to not discuss TK's new sponsor. But it's cutting edge, I'll say that much. Yeah, Tag was the last one up. I actually ended up asking Tag where his cookies were, and he said they're only in like Costco's and Target's in Canada right now, but he told me to send Bronte a message on Twitter to make sure she brings cookies to the barber race. So, but that was pretty much the rundown from Media Day at Barber. It was a long day, a wet day, a cold day. And tomorrow should be just cold without the wet.
Now, you mentioned that some of the Indy Lights guys were there and pretty much just turned around and went home.
Yes.
So there wasn't any track activity?
No. None at all. Unless you count the shuttle that went out to get the track workers back.
You know, that's something that doesn't get played up enough. You know, those track workers, a lot of times they're all volunteer, out there just cause they love racing. And man, they're out there, whether it's 110 degrees, or whether it's 50 degrees and raining, they're out there flagging a race and working hard, and they just don't get enough recognition in my opinion.
Yeah, Brian and I were sitting at the world famous Rusty's Barbecue a little while ago, which is the normal haunt for the IndyCar people when they come to Birmingham. It's a little barbecue restaurant here in town. And there was a bunch of people sitting at a table next to us that were corner workers, actually.
And wondering, where are the cars? It's 51 degrees and raining, and we're waiting, and here comes a tram.
Yeah. So that's basically how their day turned out today. But we'll all be back tomorrow. I am honestly not expecting any track activity till after lunch, really. Simply because I don't think the temperatures will get warm enough until after lunch, or maybe just a little before lunch. But
wow, how cold is it down there?
Supposed to get down to about freezing tonight.
When we left, it was 46 degrees.
Oh yeah, that's below the minimum.
Yeah, Firestone wants a certain ambient temp for the tires, and the drivers want others to sweep off the silt off the track and lay some rubber.
Well, it's the track temperature, the road surface has to be, I believe, a minimum of 50-something degrees, low 50 degrees before Firestone will give the nod to let them go. I remember we ran into that at Kansas Speedway a couple of times when they switched to the spring race as opposed to the summer date. But, well, with it wet, you know, and I suppose it's supposed to be cloudy there tomorrow as well.
Sun's supposed to start breaking through later in the day.
Okay, but not in the morning.
Right, in the morning.
So, yeah, it's going to be hard to build heat in that track.
Right, so they'll just kill the morning, have a lunch break, and start pounding around after 1 o'clock, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame that the Indy Lights guys aren't going to be there, all 9 of them.
Both of them would have had a good time.
Yeah, we've got, right now, Indy Lights this is going to be an interesting beast this year. So far, we have 8 signed drivers. We have Gabby Chavez, Jack Hawksworth, who we had already mentioned for Schmidt-Peterson Motorsport. Earlier in the week, we found that Sage Karam finally signed a deal to drive in Indy Lights, although not with Andretti Autosport, but with Sam Schmidt, Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports. And so you're looking at just one stacked team. You've got the champion, the first and second runner-up from the 2012 Mazda, or the Pro Mazda Series, Star Mazda Series, all on the same team, on the best team in the Indy Lights paddock. So one of those is going to be your champion right there. You know, there's been talk that Carlos Munoz with Andretti is strong, and he is. He is extremely strong, and Andretti's not a slouch team. But, man, what a lineup to try and best. And, you know, the same for Velarde. Velarde also has shown some great speed, especially towards the end of last year with Peter Dempsey. But, again, I mean, those are some long odds against some really great talent. I think Munoz and Dempsey, I think their chances to really try to make a run at the championship is going to have to come early and come from experience with the car. I think that's where their edge is going to be, is their knowledge and understanding of that person's life chassis. And the seat time at Barber really, really could have helped Chavez, Karam, and Hawksworth. So the fact that they're not there running, you know, that just gives a little bit more edge to Munoz and Dempsey, I think.
You know, I really think that this is a make or break year for Indy Lights in general. I mean, if they don't do something about the chassis and they don't get the field counts up, then they just need to scrap it.
Yeah, you know, there's been talk, and we've mentioned this a little bit, although we haven't discussed it in detail, and maybe on another night when we have more time we will. But you know, there's been talk about taking the Pro Mazda series, and as they evolve into new equipment, put them at a level that's maybe just a little bit shy of Lights, with a 350 horsepower motor or something like that, that bridges just straight from USF 2000 to the Pro Mazda Indy Lights Hybrid and then to IndyCar. So there's three runs instead of four as we have now. We'll see how that goes out. You know, we're probably not going to get a whole lot more drivers signed up in Lights this year. We might have a dozen, maybe. But in spite of the low count, the talent level is huge. I mean, we've got some really great drivers. It's just we don't have many of them. But anyway, so have all the teams gone, or is there anyone from Lights left in Barber?
Oh, they were out of there by noon.
Oh. So they got down there and said, well, this was a waste of fuel.
Screw this.
Well, with regards to the rest of the Maserati Indy news, as I mentioned, Sage Karam was signed for a ride at Schmidt-Peterson Motorsport, driving the number 8. He's got his same sponsorship as some previous seasons with Comfort Revolution. It's just now with a new team. I wondered what was going on there towards the end of last year. And Brian, I think I mentioned this to you when you're down at the peak last year. There seemed to be some awkwardness there at Andretti Autosport, Sage and his teammate then. Maybe that played into this decision to move from Andretti to a deal with Schmidt. Do you have any feeling on that, Brian?
No, I could never reach Mr. Karam at the Petit Le Mans weekend, so let's just let bygones be bygones.
Yeah. But anyway, so you know, a bit of a surprise that the move, but you know, really, I guess it's not too large of a surprise. And you know, of other places that you could have landed, wow, how can you do better than landing a spot at the team that's won the last three championships in the past 3 years running?
You know, though, I would say that something definitely has to be up, because if I remember correctly, Sage Karam is a friend of the Andretti family, lives next door to them, and was pretty much tapped to be one of their future IndyCar drivers.
Yeah, and so something must have happened. Not sure exactly what, but it does sound a little sketch. But anyway, that's getting into more soap opera stuff rather than straight up racing stuff.
Right. Marco Stoll's girlfriend.
Well, there's nothing to say he can't drive for Andretti Autosport in the IndyCar series someday.
This is true. This is absolutely true.
And honestly, if you're looking at a Lance ride, a Schmidt ride is better than an Andretti ride.
Yes. you know, I had to think about that, and yeah, it is. Schmidt is the team to be on. You know, there was a time when they were Andretti Green AFS when they had the car to beat.
But those drivers' names were things like Plowman and Hinchcliffe and Wilson.
Yeah. But anyway, right now, the past few seasons, it's been all Sam Schmidt. If you're not on his team, then you're fighting for second championship at best. But anyway, on to the first rung of the Maserati Indy Ladder and our upcoming race at Sebring here later in the week. We got news of a new driver signing. Mr. Hobbs, the young Mr. Hobbs, is going to be racing for Arms Up Motorsport. In fact, they're bringing four new drivers to the USF 2000. But Andrew Hobbs, grandson of David, will be racing with Arms Up. Arms Up is a fine outfit. I still think that the front runners are going to be the two drivers for Cape Motorsports and Diego Ferreira. But I'm thinking Pro Mazda, and I'm thinking Diego.
Go Diego, go!
Yeah, boy, it's late. Let's see, who was it with? I'm trying to remember the Winterfest now, and boy, I've gone blank. Hargrove, and who was the other Cape Motorsport driver that did so well? Ah, it's out. Oh, Albarico. Yeah. But anyway, for Sebring, we now have 30 drivers. Again, the strength of of the USF 2000 series really showing through. And you know what's interesting about this entry list is last year we were kind of split 50-50 between the championship class drivers and the national class drivers in the Formula Continental and Formula Enterprise cars, right? Well, here at Sebring you have three national class drivers, and that's it. All the rest, the other 27, are in championship class rides. Now, I will say that I'm a little concerned about this because this year, SEC Enterprises is a sponsor for the series. They're sponsoring the national class and offering a scholarship for whoever wins the national class to move up to the championship class. Last year, it seemed like a great move because there was great battles in both the championship class and the national class. In fact, the national class went down to the last cup, the last weekend. And it was great entertainment. And so it seemed like a really, really good move. But now when you're looking at three national class drivers or entries, you know, I worry about the continued participation of SCCA Enterprises, or if we don't go back to just a single spec chassis. You know, just have the national class and nothing else. If there's not going to be much demand for the national class, and I think that's about it for Mazda Road Diddy until we start getting some reports from Mr. McKay there from Sebring. Really looking forward to your photos from that weekend.
Yeah, I want to see young Austin Cindric, see what he does.
Yeah, he had a rough time of it at the Winterfest. Would like to see him a bit stronger. That's for certain.
So what's next, Kevin?
Well, coming up next, we're going to hit a little Formula One news. And gentlemen, it is time for Melbourne. The sun rises again in the east. If you go far into the west.
The sun rises in the east, and if you're on Eastern Standard Time, you need to tune in at 1:30 a.m. on Sunday Sunday morning to watch this on NBC Sportsnet.
And this is why we have DVRs.
Yes,
it is.
Indeed. I don't know. I keep thinking that I'm going to be, you know, young and full of vim and vigor and stay up and watch it, but I know I can't. I mean, I'm already about ready to fall asleep, and it's 11 p.m.
If you're Jay Penske, you're young and full of piss and vinegar.
That's true. That's true. Well, no, not anymore.
Yeah,
he's taking care of that. Take care of that problem.
But I tell you what, sir, I'll make a pact with you right now. If you stay up, I'll stay up.
Ooh. Skype race watching, huh?
Yep, you betcha.
So, gentlemen, this leads to the question, are we doing the Formula One Challenge again this year?
I think we will shelve it for another week. Let's not discuss it on the podcast. Melbourne can wait. We can make picks. But if we do decide to do something, Melbourne won't be part of it.
And we really should have started with WRC.
Indeed, indeed. Maybe we'll decide starting April 1st that we'll start making picks then.
Yeah, you guys are no fun.
But that does beg the question. We're going to Melbourne. All new driver lineups at some teams. The cars are fairly similar to what we saw last year, but man, everybody tweaked everything they could get from these cars last year. Are we seeing a four-way battle for the championship among Mercedes, McLaren, Ferrari, and Red Bull? Is there a chance that a Renault starts to peek their way in to get race wins on a more regular basis? What are we going to see? And honestly, I'm having a hard time picking against Red Bull for the championship this year. However, Ferrari's starting at a much better place than they were last year. And I still haven't decided who I'm going to call for the season.
You know,
let's see.
I still don't see how you can vote or bet against Vettel, and or more importantly, I don't see how you can bet against Adrian Newey.
Yeah.
You know, as we saw last year, the Red Bull chassis wasn't the greatest coming out beginning of the season, but it improved significantly and dramatically over the course of the season, thanks to, well, Mr. Newey. And, you know, so it's like the whole line about the, you know, you don't go up against a Sicilian when death is on the line, right? Yeah. You don't go up against Adrian Newey when you're talking about aerodynamics.
I'd prefer to quote the professional wrestler Ric Flair in this situation.
Oh, God. Is he still alive?
Yes, he is, very much so. And that is, in order to be the man, you have to beat the man.
Yes, but when the man is Adrian Newey, there's no beating, especially exactly. When he's got Sebastian Vettel as a hot shoe for his hot ride.
Exactly, which is why I will continue to pick Sebastian Vettel to win the championship until someone actually knocks him off.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you know, it is interesting. Ferrari has potentially a better chassis starting off the season than they did last year. I remember last year, Alonso called it, I think the word he used was complicated. And we're not hearing that this year. And so if the Ferrari development team can really keep up, then maybe Alonso does best Vettel. Although, you know, I don't want to say, you know, I don't want to imply that that Alonso isn't the man. He's already proven to have been the man a couple of times at least already, and you know, I tell you what he wrung out of that slug of a car last year should really solidify his his the man status in Formula One, because that was damned impressive.
There's no doubt in my mind that Alonso is the best driver in Formula One. I mean, just pure driver.
Yeah. He can wring more out of a car than any other driver in the grid.
Can you imagine what would happen if you had Alonso in that Red Bull with Adrian Newey as the engineer?
Weber would be so far behind.
Weber would be trying to stay on the lead lap.
Nice.
Weber would be trying to keep him from slitting his wrists. I mean, it would be that bad.
We've already seen that combo, you know, in spirit, and that was Ferrari and Schumacher.
Yes.
Oh. Except for when Renault beat him twice.
Yeah. All right, Marussia, still in negotiations with Bernie Ecclestone.
Oh, this is an interesting one. Marussia is not signatory to the Concorde Agreement currently. And what this does that's kind of interesting, they've entered F1. They've paid their entry fees to the FIA. So they are part of the F1 World Championship. However, they don't have a contract with Bernie Ecclestone guaranteeing that they'll be there and all that kind of stuff. What this does, though, and Marussia basically said, here's the interesting thing. We can wait to negotiate on this. We can take our time, but Bernie can't, because without us being signatory to his Concorde Agreement, he can't show our pictures on TV.
Yeah.
That's an interesting statement. I don't know if it holds water, but boy, I'll tell you.
Maybe someone has finally out-Bernie'd Bernie.
Well, but then again, Bernie probably has magical control of those TV cameras, and he could probably make it through a race weekend without ever showing the Marussias. And then who wins? Marussia's sponsors? No. Wait. Does Marussia have sponsors?
Marussia is the sponsor, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, this is a weird situation to be in. I think Marussia's just holding out for more and more and more money and trying to come up with reasons why Bernie needs to pay them more and more and more money to be involved in Formula One. And Bernie has said, you know, he's made no bones about it for the last several months. Formula One would be fine with 10 teams.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
23rd Formula One calendar to stay at 19 races as is the 20th night.
Yeah, the World Motorsport Council met, and nobody's shocked about this. New Jersey didn't make the schedule because they were behind on basically financing, as well as behind on getting necessary agreements from local municipalities to run said race. So they are not on the calendar. F1 tried to find some replacement events, talking to Turkey, talking with Austria, the Red Bull Ring over there, and other venues, and nothing ever came about. So guess what? Nobody's shocked about this. We knew this weeks ago. However, the FIA World Motorsport Council just got around to ratifying said said schedule. And it's just going to be 19 races. So
man, it's a shame because that Turkey track in Istanbul is just freaking awesome.
I got non-refundable airfare.
Goodness.
Yeah, but Jersey is back on for 2014, right?
Supposedly, they're looking for a mid-season 2014 event. They don't know what they're going to get as far as a date. They'll probably end up getting scheduled against like the World Series or something like that.
It'll be Mets versus Yankees.
Yeah, exactly. If currently what's going on in Austin has any say in what's going to happen. But New Jersey is supposedly back on for 2014. There have been pictures coming out from the construction that is currently taking place. The pit paddock complex is being built. None of the track has been done yet. None of the repaving of the roads there has been done yet. And obviously that's a major part of this whole ordeal. But the pit paddock complex is under construction. So it looks like things are moving forward on New Jersey's standpoint. I was afraid that this would just disappear after not making the schedule this season. And it looks like they're making a valiant effort to be ready for next year. So that's a good thing.
Excellent. And in a last bit of Formula One news there, Pasto Maldonado is unaffected by the death of Uncle Hugo.
Yes, apparently Pastor Maldonado is going to be able to go visit Hugo Chavez in his mummified state that they're going to put him in there. They're going to lay Hugo Chavez in state permanently after they, you know, preserve his body. He's going to be in a glass case for all time. And Pastor Maldonado's funding apparently has been mummified as well, so he can continue driving, supposedly. Now, this is all Politico speak, and we shall see.
It's going to be kind of interesting to see what happens with that, and if Uncle Frozen Hugo continues to bring money.
Did you guys hear the stink that came up? You know, speaking of New Jersey and the date problem that possibly could arise. You know, obviously it's New York, and there's a lot that goes on there, but Austin, you know, obviously they have the issue where they have a home football game, home college football game, the weekend of the Grand Prix this year. And there were some issues with that date, because now it's coming out that the tour companies are basically, they're looking at surrounding cities, for hotel rooms, because Austin has been charging a premium. Supposedly Austin hotels have been asking prices above what people would pay for hotels in Monte Carlo.
Yeah, I've been hearing same thing. And, you know, I will tell you, it does not surprise me in the least.
No.
This was the, and of course, now the thing is, this means nothing to Mr. Eccleston, right?
No.
This
no,
means
not at all.
Nothing to him. You know, when people try to, you know, if you were to go up to him, try to explain to him, the nature of football in Texas, and, you know, that there is God, country, and football, but not necessarily in that order, you know, it wouldn't matter to him at all. It would be in one ear, out the other. And so his refusal to change the date, and from my ear, there's been no budging on the date. Is that right?
No budging whatsoever. And, yeah, like you said, Doug, I can see why these hotel rooms are going for as stiff a premium as they are.
Oh yeah,
the matter is, there's 100,000 hotel rooms in that city because of football.
Right. And now you've got 200,000 people vying for, you know, those limited resources.
Yeah. So, I don't know what y'all talking
you're
about.
You're going to be seeing, you know, at least double rates, even in the surrounding communities, I bet.
I don't know what you're talking about, because nobody goes to Texas football games. I mean, that's just ludicrous, gentlemen.
Says guy from Alabama.
Where we play real football, thank you very much. I'm sorry, Texas.
What, rugby?
Football. What y'all are doing over there is very cute, but it's not real football. Sorry. It's not real football if it's not SEC football.
Oh. And of course, the Australians are over, you know, looking at us going, pads.
And they may have something there.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I think that's going to do it for episode number 179 of the Open Paddock Podcast. Douglas the Patterson, do you have any last-minute additions?
I will say to if you have clear skies right after sunset, go out and look west. One of two potentially visible comets is in our sky right now. This week and through a little bit past St. Patrick's Day, we'll be able to see the comet Pan-STARRS. They're right after the sun sets there in the west. It's a very rare opportunity. We don't often get a visible naked eye visible comet. I think the last one was Comet McNaught was visible just for a little bit, not for very long. And then before that, it was Hale-Bopp and Comet Hyakutake in the mid-90s. So this is a rare event. Get out there and watch it. Like I said, about half an hour after sunset, get out there and look west.
Mike Shaw, do you have any last-minute additions as well?
The only thing I got last minute is I just wanted to actually reflect back that World Motorships Council thing. I forgot to mention just real quick that the FAA was saying that they want says that WMSC has mandated relevant FIA commissions for concrete proposals to empower the presence of GT cars in rallies as soon as possible. So that's going to be interesting. It'd be neat to see GT cars out there.
Yeah. I keep seeing Nissan's 370 GTR trying to negotiate a rally stage, and how epically horrible and awesome that would be.
You know, I can see him on the on the tarmac courses.
Oh yeah, yeah, on tarmac. But,
yeah.
Do you see him up in Sweden? I mean, seriously.
Nice. You know,
how about a 458 Italia on snow tires?
Mike Watzel, do you have any last minute additions as well?
Speaking of the FIA and the World Motorsport Council, they instituted a driver's commission, and it spans across all forms of motorsport. Emerson Fittipaldi was named as the leader of said driver's commission. Sebastian Loeb is going to be the vice president of said driver's commission, and they're going to have representatives from several different forms of motorsport. One of the curious names on there was, for single seaters, there really wasn't anybody on there that really has a whole lot of credentials. One of those was Valtteri Bottas, the lady who had her, accident when testing a rent-a-ride for Marussia, was it? I can't remember.
Yeah, the one that her face went into the
Yeah. So kind of specious. I hate to be this way, but the three single seater drivers they got didn't seem to hold a lot of water, in my opinion. But that said, you know, they getting Sebastian Loeb on that commission was phenomenal. That's a good get. Daniel Elena is also on the commission, as far as rally goes. I can't remember who else was on there, but kind of interesting arrangement, amalgam of, drivers there.
Brian McKay, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Forgot to say that J.R. Hildebrand, after testing a global rallycross car, is assembling a Chevrolet-powered drift team. Secret, though. To be announced later.
He's not kidding either. He's dead serious.
Oh, that's pretty awesome then.
Wow.
Really? And as for me, I would like to add that I would like to go to sleep sometime here.
Okay, good night.
And that's pretty much all I got. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this episode of the Open Paddock Podcast. Join us for our celebration edition number 180 next week when Brian McKay will say, absolutely nothing. Bye.
Wah, wah.